ninth episode of the Fisheries Podcast, I talk with an undergraduate student, Endora Roberts, about her experiences in the field of fisheries, both in school and internships. Thank you for joining me. I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fishery science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, at Fisheries Pod, or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Our guest today is Endora Roberts. Endora Roberts is a biology student who, as a child, thought fish were boring. She originally attended Minnesota State University Mankato to pursue a degree in terrestrial zoology, but a chance encounter with the student subunit of the American Fisheries Society on campus got her to switch to the good side. She is now attending school back home in Chicago, but plans to transfer to Wayne State University in Nebraska to finish her degree next year. Already, Endora has completed an internship with the Minnesota DNR and volunteered at the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum as well as the John G. Shedd Aquarium, where she was eventually hired on for the summer. While there, she worked with senior research biologist Phil Willink to write an invasive species paper about the round goby. Endora recently became scuba certified and plans to work towards a master's degree after completing her bachelor's. Welcome to the podcast, Endora.
Hi, thank you for having me on. It's quite an honor.
Well, as I said in the introduction, your initial focus was terrestrial zoology. How did a girl from Chicago decide to travel to Northwest Mankato to pursue terrestrial zoology?
That's a funny story. Well, when I grew up, I was like the only girl that wasn't afraid of mud or worms or whatever. I was the, you know, your stereotypical Tom girl. I loved animals. And then when I was a kid, I learned how to use the remote, like most kids. And I found Animal Planet because we had basic cable. And I just started watching shows about animals. And that got me exposed to Jeff Corwin and Steve Irwin, Jack Hanna, and O'Shea. And I just was like, oh my God, I love this. I want to do this for my life. And I'd go to the zoo. Brookfield Zoo is one of the zoos we have in the western suburbs of Chicago. And then we have Lincoln Park Zoo within the city. So I'd go there, and I actually kept a field journal without even knowing what a field journal was. I was maybe in first grade, and I had just learned how to write, and I had a notebook. And I would just go around, and I'd write observations down in horrible handwriting, and everything was misspelled. And I would just write thoughts down, and they were all about animals that I saw. So I thought originally I was going to go, you know, be the next Steve Irwin and, you know, work with alligators, because I love alligators. They're actually my favorite animal. Eventually, when I went to MSU, it was an accident. I actually went to MSU as well as joining over to the fishery side, because my father was actually a graduate of Minnesota State. Back then it was Mankato State. And when I would get the mail, I remember we would get a ton of mail from Minnesota State because he was an alumnus. And I remember I got the mail one time and I went to go give him his alumnus mail. And I turned it over and I saw it had my name on it. And I was like, this is weird. Why am I getting stuff from Mankato State? And I looked at it and they had a list of programs on it. It had zoology. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to go there. And I actually got a discount on tuition because I was a legacy student. It was either that or go to SIU. And we weren't that thrilled about SIU, Southern Illinois University. We were trying to do what we could afford at that point. That had my program. And I liked Minnesota when I went out there. I liked the university. I liked the campus. And it just clicked with me. So that's how I went to Minnesota. And when I started my second semester as a freshman, there was a resume workshop that the American Fisheries Society student subunit had. And originally, I was just going to go and get my resume looked at because I didn't want to join a club. I didn't want to do anything because I was just so focused on my grades. And I had actually just come out of a really bad semester because my first semester I got a concussion and my grades dropped. So I didn't want to do anything that was going to take enough time away from my studies because I wanted to bring myself back to, you know, being a great student because I was an honor roll student growing up. And eventually, when I went to this club, I kind of stayed. So I like to joke around that I found out about fisheries by accident, and that it was the ultimate bait and switch, and I loved it. I loved every single minute of it. I went for a resume workshop and I never left.
So once you were introduced to the student subunit there, you were pretty active. What were some of the things that you did with the AFS unit there at Mankato State?
I did a lot of things. The main things that I guess we could talk about is I was treasurer the first full school year that I was there. I had joined the second semester of my first year. So my sophomore year, I was the treasurer, and my third year, I was the vice president. We would volunteer our time at the Southern Minnesota Regional Science and Engineering Fair, and it was actually run by Dr. Shannon Fisher, who was the water resources director and the main faculty member for fisheries. So he was a graduate advisor to the president and vice president at that time, and he ran the science fair. So we talked to kids about science and, you know, really piqued their interest in it. And one other thing I really liked to do was talk to children about what they wanted to do with their lives. How did they think? Not that they were planning up, but like, I wanted to see what got their interest and did they really want to do science for their lives. And the ones that I found that really loved to do science just blew me away. Even if their project was, you know, a stereotypical third grader project, it was perfect in its own way because it really just blew me away. The passion that some of these kids had, whether it was fisheries or not. I always volunteered for animal science and I was a poster judge for about 2 years, and I was a special awards judge for 1 year, but I always represented the AFS unit, and we would give out a fishing pole to one of the kids. I don't think I gave the fishing pole away. I think our president did, because he was a special awards judge, but we'd go around and we talked to kids and we'd just have a grand old time. So I did that. Another thing we did were river cleanups. Now, when I say river cleanup, I mean we went out in kayaks and we paddled down the Minnesota River, which was adjacent to Mankato itself, and we would go through the river and pick out garbage from the river. So we'd go to every sandbank, we'd go to every shore that we saw garbage on, we would have these huge garbage bags, and it would be maybe... Oh, sometime, I think there was like 15 of us the first year and then 12 of us the second year, or something like that. And there were more of us the second year, and we had teams. We had, I don't know how many bags of garbage. I have pictures that I can look up, but we were pulling out tires out of the river and just putting them on the canoes. And we pulled out a tractor tire over the first year, and I was just so proud of that. But there's a lot of tires in the Minnesota River. Otherwise, we would go to Sibley Park or Land of Memories Park, and we'd go along the riverbank of the Minnesota River, and we'd pick up garbage there. My final year at Minnesota State, before I came back home, we did the Sibley Park cleanup where we did some beautification of the park, and we volunteered with the zoology club as well as the field ecology club that was also at Minnesota State. So we did that, and also we were made up of undergraduate and graduate students. The graduate students, when the subunit was first formed, were the leadership. And I remember there was Thor Tackett, Nathan Lederman, and April Londo. April, I would help in her laboratory because she was an aquatic science student, and I helped her go through zebra mussel samples. She was also a scuba diver, so she was the very first scuba diver I met and my inspiration to become a scuba diver. Nathan was the president and vice president for the last 2 years he was there, and he really loved fisheries. He still does. I mean, he works for the Illinois DNR now. It's funny, actually, everybody I knew in the subunit, April ended up working for the Minnesota DNR. Nathan went from the Illinois Natural History Survey to the Illinois DNR. I think he listens to this podcast, so he probably can hear me talk about him now. And I forget what Thor ended up doing, but they all went into fisheries careers after they got their master's. And they're, from what I understand, very happy with where they're at. So I would help some of the graduate students with their research. I didn't even get credit for it. I just did it for the hell of it, and because they were my friends. And I would help April measure zebra mussels in length. And then I learned aquatic plant identification through working with her. So I learned about Illinois pondweed and milfoil and a couple other plants that I can't think of right now. So we did that. And also one of my favorite things we would do with the graduate students, and Nathan usually was the leader in this respite, there was a lake in East Mankato. It was pretty much behind the mall. And this lake is about the size of a pond, but it's called Lake Dorothy. And we had permission to go there since it was a private lake. And the graduate students would take us out and show us how to use, us being the undergraduate students, show us how to use fisheries equipment. So like fike nets or trap nets, depending on where you're at. Seining techniques, gill nets. We would do backpack shocking. And originally this lake was believed to have a fish kill in it. We're not sure how fish survived, but they did, okay, because we threw out some nets and we actually got some fish. So that was the highlight and what really hooked me into fisheries. We would pull up bluegill, we'd pull up black bullheads, not my friends. I don't like black bullheads. I've been stabbed by them many times. And we'd pull up snapping turtles, red-eared sliders. We'd learn how to use waders and how to not get wet in them. That was my favorite part because every time I had put on waders in high school, I'd trip and fall and get water all inside. So that was what really solidified my interest into fisheries. So when I eventually left Minnesota State because things didn't work out for one reason or another, originally I took a year off of school. I kind of had like a quarter-life crisis. I guess I'm not midlife yet, and I'm not exactly a quarter life, but I was thinking, do I really want to do this the rest of my life? Is this something I want to commit to? Because, I mean, you know, college is expensive. And I thought about it every single day, and I just worked for a year, and when I came back to Chicago, and then I woke up one day and thought, yeah, I do want to do this for the rest of my life. Yeah, I do. And I went back to school, and originally it was part-time, and so it's taken me a very long time for school, but I've been paying as I go, and I ended up at the City Colleges of Chicago, and I will graduate with my Associate in Biological Sciences in May, because I'm finally going full-time for my last couple semesters, and I'm just looking for internships and things that get me exposed to fish. Like, in 2016, I actually interned with the Minnesota DNR. That was my dream job. And that was an accident, too. Originally, I applied for a wildlife internship, but as I was on the portal, I found a fisheries internship, and I just jumped on that because I was part of AFS, and I knew somewhat about fish, and I went through the interviews, and I prepped myself for the interview, like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I need to know? And I grilled myself about what I knew about fish. I asked the graduate students for help at one point on how to prepare for the interview, and I got the internship, and I went to Windham, Minnesota every day. I worked in the Southwest office. I was the only girl in Southwest Minnesota and Southeast Minnesota, actually, because I had a friend who was also in the subunit with me. He went to the Eastern office. I went to the Western office in the South part of Minnesota, and yeah, I was the only girl, and I thought that was strange and a little sad because it's a wonderful field to be in. This fisheries, fish are fascinating. And I don't understand why there aren't more girls that are into it. But then again, I was, you know, your actual tomboy. So I like dirty things. I don't mind getting dirty or fish slime all over me, especially when it came to pulling in the nets. Boat. They called me Turtle Girl. That was my nickname when I was with the Windham area guys. Because every single time we had a snapping turtle, I tried to play with it, or I'd try to save it, or make sure that, you know, it was living and breathing, and we'd go on our merry way and go to our next trap net and do our fish surveys. But every time we came across a snapping turtle, even though they tried to take my hands off, because they were big. Oh my God, they were big. Yeah, I'd try to take care of everything, especially when it came to other aquatic life. So, I don't know, I'm an animal girl all around. I love fish. I love turtles. I love alligators. They're all in the water. What else did we do in AFS? That was it. We did the river cleanups, the science fair. I still do science fairs. I was part of the American Chemical Society at Wilbur Wright College, who's part of City Colleges. We actually went to an elementary school and we still do science fairs, and I'm looking to independently go to science fairs and, you know, talk to kids. Because one thing that's really important to me is to make sure that kids are engaged in science, especially if there's a passion for that. That's one thing I wanted to add to that. Because when I was doing science fair, I didn't do science fair until high school. And I don't know why that was like that, but I was 14 years old and I did a research class that half of it was a history class, and we alternated between a history class and a science class. So we were preparing for history fair and science fair in the same semester. So we did a science fair project, and it was a terrible science fair project. I don't remember what I did the first time. I just remember I hated it, and I was thinking, why would anyone want to do this for a living? And the second time I did it, it was great. But when I went to be judged, I had a judge that pretty much ripped me apart. And eventually, she had judged me so harshly, and I don't think she had realized it, but she was just pointing out all my flaws, and I was literally about to cry. And she just looks at me and goes, oh, are you doing this just for a grade? And I'm like, no, I want to be a scientist. Thank you. And I think that's important to note, because I still went ahead and I didn't let that stop me. And when I started doing undergraduate research, I realized it's just like science fair. And I'm going to try harder and I'm going to succeed at this because I want to. And I'm not going to let anybody stop me. And whenever I go to science fairs now, I am that little kid again. And whenever I can see passion and interest in the sciences, yeah, I'm going to talk to them a little bit and see what they really want to do. And I'm going to further that interest, because that's our next generation right there.
I've judged a few science fairs too, and
oh, they're fun.
Yeah, they are fun. I did it while I was in graduate school, and I was coming from a more professional science scene, as a little more kind of cringing at some of their projects. Like, oh, you don't even have a control in your project. But then at the same time, you got to be supportive of them, and they're trying, and they're just doing as much as they can on top of all the other 8 classes they're taking in a school year compared to the 3 classes I was taking in graduate school.
That's true. That's true. And I've actually had some science projects that were just out of this world. Like, I didn't know that you could be that advanced at that age. And I'm just thinking, you didn't have your parents do this because I'm talking to you and you have everything memorized. So you put a lot of work into this, and I can tell that your parents didn't do this and you did this and you are only 12.
So you mentioned your internship with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and you kind of went through some of the things you did, but what were the main duties of your internship? And like, what was your title and what did your day consist of?
I was a fisheries intern officially, I believe. It was intern on the application, but we specialized in fisheries, so I say fisheries intern, because there was also the wildlife intern, which I originally applied for. I got denied that one, thankfully, and I went to the fisheries side of things, just better side of things, let's be honest. And what our day consisted of, well, it took me an hour to get from Mankato to Windham, because I didn't realize the Western office was actually far away. I'm not that good at geography when it in Minnesota, apparently. But so I would drive an hour each way on a commute down Highway 60, and I would help out the staff and the research biologists taking surveys, taking sonar surveys. The other intern and I would sometimes go out by ourselves and take sonar surveys. That was always fun. We would go out and set nets. We'd go set nets and come back the next day, check those nets, and then we do fish surveys. And fish surveys were essentially taking the fish, counting them, weighing them, measuring them, and taking scales and putting them into little manila envelopes that we take back to the office. So those were fish surveys. We'd also take water quality. We would also use a machine that we would put into the water on a line, and it would tell us, it would give us back a reading of how many fish were below. I don't remember the name of that machine, but I thought that was cool. I think it had to deal with telemetry. I can't remember the name of it. Other than that, there was sonar surveys. And then came the regular duties of, you know, making sure the boats had gasoline canisters and the gasoline canisters were full, washing the trucks, keeping the compound clean, setting up the nets on the boat, which there's a specific way to set nets up For those of you that don't know, when you have the nets on the bow of the boat, you have them put up upside down so that when you tow the boat out, the lead actually goes out first, and then you drop the net into the water in the furthest point, which I thought was cool. I didn't know about that. I also learned how to tie ropes and do slip knots, and I'm very bad at that. I was in Girl Scouts, and I was just terrible at survival skills. It was actually kind of funny. So I learned how to tie knots and slip knots, especially for the trap nets. And I remember we had three different types of trap nets, depending on the size of the mesh for whatever type of fish we were going for, whether they were larger fish or smaller fish. We would use different size of mesh, the holes in the net, essentially. And then we would do gill nets. We did IBI surveys, which stands for, I know these acronyms, I'm just blanking right now because I'm on the spot, but IBI surveys were kind of cool. We did that in the heat, top heat of summer, and go out and we would do backpack shocking, and then we'd just take samples of fish and put them in jars of alcohol and send them off to the lab. I love backpack shocking, except that's how I found out there was a hole in my waders. There's a bit of a shock there. We would also do electrofishing, very favorite thing to do, and we would go electrofishing in the boat. Now, there's two types of electrofishing. There's the backpack shocking, which I was talking about earlier, and then there's the boat electroshocking. And we would have these 12 to 15 foot nets that we would just dip in the water, and we would have rubber gloves on. There was a safety switch. Both Tannen and I had to keep our foot on when the electrodes were in the water. And it would shock the fish, non-lethally, thankfully, but they'd come up to the surface, and we would just pick out the fish that we needed or were looking for, and we would just go on our merry way. I was very good at spotting catfish, and with sunglasses on, in murky water, I was very good at identifying what fish was coming up. I don't know how I did that, but I could spot a catfish away under 4 feet of water, which I thought was kind of cool. I just didn't have the strength to pick up a larger carp, so Tannen and I would like switch off between playing to our strengths because he was stronger than me. But yeah, it was fun. I loved every minute of it. And when the internship ended, I just I was sad, and I was like, I could do this again, and I kind of want to do this forever. I kept a journal of every single day. We did electrofishing for county fairs, and we would get a sample of fish for the county fairs for displays. And I remember that was the highlight of my summer, because when we went to deliver these fish, all these children gathered around the truck. And I distinctly remember the look on these children's faces. They were just awestruck that we had fish and that we were putting them in the tanks. And I remember this one girl, I could have sworn I was looking at myself, because I was that kid that was like, oh my God, animals, oh my God, baby chicks. And I'm from the city, so I never really, I went to a county fair once when I was a child, and I was just with the animals. You couldn't pry me away from the animals. But they were just so fascinated about these fish, and I'm just like, I'm seeing myself, and this is why I took this job. And I knew I was on the right track because of the elation that I felt knowing that I was that kid. And I remember watching professionals do what they do and thinking, I want that job. And eventually, as the intern, I kind of had that job. So that's that.
And you mentioned in an email to me that this internship was also your first experience driving a boat in a truck. Was that something you had never gotten the chance to do prior to this?
No. You see, in the city, you don't really need a truck. And in Chicago, we have Lakeshore Drive. And you can't really have trucks on Lakeshore Drive. I forget why. I think it has to do with something about tunnels. But trucks aren't allowed on Lakeshore Drive. And you just never really needed a truck. We always were a sedan family. You just kind of needed a car. I mean, my dad has a Prius because we have much air pollution, and it's an electric car, or a hybrid car, excuse me. So it's easy for traffic. I have a Corolla that's great for gas mileage because I'm stuck in traffic all the time, or I commute. So no, I had never driven a truck before. It was funny because I'm 5'3". And these were like Ram 500s or whatever. and I was so short, I had to actually sit on a phone book to reach the pedals and to see over the dashboard. And I had to move my seat all the way to the front. So I was like this little person driving this truck. So that they kind of didn't, not that they didn't let me drive the truck, but they had me drive it so seldom. It's so hard for me to do. But I drove the truck. I went to the gas stations. I filled everything up. I drove around the compound a lot. And then when I got my boater's license, oh my God, it was the best day of my life. We were doing book work for learning how to drive boats. And we had to do actually driving the boat in the lake. And that was cool. Again, I was short. So I had to sit on the very edge of the seat for the E&R boats that they had. And the throttle was constantly vibrating. So I had my hand barely on it. Something to do with that particular motor. It just was vibrating so hard I could barely keep my hand on it. And then I could barely sit in the chair. So it was kind of funny. And I remember on our final boater's test, it was pouring rain. And there was a thunderstorm. So we were pressed for time. It hadn't thundered yet, but it was really bad. And I was the only one who actually brought my my rain jacket. I kind of knew it was going to rain. So here I am in my rain jacket and waders, and we're taking our boat test, and we're just doing phenomenal, Tannen and me. So I passed my boater's test in the rain, and as soon as we had finished up, then the thunder started and the lightning came, and we got out of there as fast as possible. But I remember, you know, you take it in the worst of conditions, and you're prepared for the best of conditions. So I remember that specifically. It was great. So I had never driven a boat before, and I had never driven a truck before. Nowadays, I go up to Chain of Lakes State Park in Illinois with my dad, and we rent out boats. And he's like, okay, you can drive your license to drive a boat. He knows how to drive boats, but he's like, okay, you have the actual license to drive the boat. And I get so excited whenever we go fishing. I'm like, yes, I get to drive the boat.
So from your experience, would you recommend participation in AFS subunits and pursuing these internship opportunities to other undergraduate students?
Oh, I definitely would. You really don't know who you are until you pursue your interest. Like I was saying, I went to the AFS subunit and it was not a mistake, but it was an accident. And I just never left, and I loved it. So sometimes you just got to go out of your comfort zone. Like, I thought I was going to do wildlife for the rest of my life, and I'm not. So you don't realize when you're going to change, and you have to be ready for these changes. So, yeah, go join a club. Go follow your interest. Go do something that's slightly different than what you think you're doing. You might actually enjoy it more. Pursue those internships, because one of the graduate students told me, you know, take as many internships as you can, because you don't know whether or not you're going to like the job. And do the internship, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's an internship. And if you don't like it, then you can always change what you want to do. But if you have the job and you're stuck with the job, you know, tough luck. So pursue your interest. See if you like doing what you're doing. And just follow your instincts, because your instincts will lead you to places you don't expect. And sometimes it's for the better.
And along those lines, if a lot of these states that hire a lot of interns, they're pretty competitive with all the other fisheries students. So don't be afraid to take an internship for a position that you didn't quite want. When I was a freshman, I really wanted fisheries management internship in Iowa, and I didn't get it. I was offered a aquatic nuisance species boat ramp survey position, and that led to a vegetation survey crew that traveled the state, and eventually I got that fisheries management internship that I wanted. So don't be afraid to take a different internship than the one you wanted if it's offered to you.
It's a way to get your foot in the door, and that's the main thing.
So since you've moved back home, you've volunteered at two museums. How are those experiences different than your time with the Minnesota DNR?
Well, they don't exactly have to do with fisheries management. At the Peggy Notabart Nature Museum, I'm actually a collections volunteer, and I make study skins out of ornithological specimens, so birds. I'm a taxidermist. I'm a junior taxidermist, pretty much. I skin birds and clean out turtle shells, and I make them pretty for the education department or for I take the data off of them. I record the data into a database, an Excel sheet, and I think they're using a database now. But yeah, I will go ahead and I will make something for the collections department for the field of science. I will make something for the education department for children to touch. I will make touch specimens. I will make a study skin so that we can file them away and scientists can come back later, study and see, oh, they had this plumage. They had this color eye based on the data that we have. They had this type of shell and it feels like this. So I do that at the Penguin. And at the Chet Aquarium, I was a conservation volunteer, which I actually became a conservation volunteer because I was a volunteer at the Penguin of our Nature Museum. What happened was Dr. Phil Willink was the senior research biologist at the Chet Aquarium, and he came to a panel that was hosted by the Notabar Nature Museum, also known as the Chicago Academy of Sciences. And it was him, someone from the Field Museum, and then a citizen scientist, and they were talking about the status of the Great Lakes. And afterwards, I had spoken to the volunteer coordinator. I'm like, how can I get in contact? He had been talking about fisheries management. And I'm thinking, oh, I can get some research with him, and I can actually work with him, and do something similar to what I did with the Minnesota DNR. So I emailed him, and I didn't exactly do sampling, but I did that sampling once in October last year, but I actually wrote a paper, my very first scientific paper, and it was about my favorite fish, the round goby, which is an invasive species that has invaded the Great Lakes system. So what I got to do was analyze GIS data, geography information systems data, that was provided to us through the Illinois Natural History Survey, the Forest Preserve of DuPage County. I got to government entities essentially gave us the GPS coordinates that they had logged when they would take the surveys and found the round goby in the DuPage River. Now, the DuPage River is not connected to the Des Plaines River, which is an infected river, and it's connected to other river systems that connect to Lake Michigan, which is how the ground goby got into that system. So it was mind-boggling. How did the ground goby get into this DuPage River system? Well, we hypothesized bait buckets, which essentially is an anthropological mechanism for dumping gobies into the river. So we thought someone took gobies and put them in the river for various reasons. Gobies are actually used as bait sometimes, as bait fish, so that's what we had suspected. We didn't have the proof, but what we could do is we hypothesized bait buckets based on the GPS points, and we created a map, and then I wrote a paper based on the map. It is under peer review right now, and I should be hearing back from the editor sometime in December, hopefully. I submitted it in late May, early June. So that was that. That's what I did at the Chet Aquarium. And then when I worked there, I wasn't a conservation volunteer. I didn't work in the conservation department. I actually worked in guest services. I worked in the guest experience department, customer service. But I was surrounded by fish every day, so I loved it. And I figured, you know, if I can get my name in the system, I can always transfer positions later when I do get a actual degree, because I could become an aquarist possibly and learn about conservation of fisheries, or conservation of fish, I should say, from a private institution rather than a government institution. So I worked in the guest experience department, and I made a lot of people happy. I was on par with my fish facts, and I totally blew people's minds away. And I was the nicest person, and I just put smiles on everyone's face and made sure everybody who came to the aquarium, who passed by, was having a good day. So that's, I love being at the aquarium. And so that was my time there, both working there and volunteering there. So we're just waiting to hear back from the paper. I presented a PowerPoint based on the paper findings at the, what is it called? Northeastern Illinois University Student Research and Creative Activity Symposium. I have an actual plaque on my wall. It's just such a long name, I can't ever remember it. But I was invited to go by a professor that I knew. And so I presented there, and then I had just missed the Illinois AFS meeting. So I'm going to see if it's possible for me to present there, because Dr. Willink and I had talked about it. So I'm looking forward to that, if I do get to present the paper there.
Well, I didn't submit my first paper until after I had defended my thesis, so congratulations on outpacing me and many other fisheries professionals.
No, it's funny because I didn't even realize I was going to write a paper until it was suggested to me. I just thought I was doing a GIS project. And then it was like, well, you should write this up and then we can publish it. I'm like, we can do that? Yes, we can do that. So thank you. It's kind of like stumbling around blindly and then you're finding your way. And I kind of like it. The way it's been. I've been very slow, like my education has been slow, and but I've been doing things along the way, and they've kind of paid off for me, so thank you.
And I've always kicked myself for not being more involved in attending meetings or conferences as an undergraduate. What advice would you have for the next wave of fisheries students?
Go to the conferences. Do it. Seriously. Try to save up money or try to actually learn how to write grants. Because a lot of times you need money to go to conferences. You can get a student rate, but you still need money. And then there's, depending on where it is, you got to have the hotel room. There's the registration fee and so on and so on. So you need money for conferences, but you need to go to these conferences. They are so vital and you can network with people. You can learn things. I learned so much about fish and wildlife when I actually, 2016 Midwest Fish and Wildlife Conference in Grand Rapids, a group of us from Minnesota State that actually went there and done research, and it was life-changing, honestly. I met people, I talked to people in the Fish and Wildlife Service, in the Illinois DNR. You can network with people, like I said, and you never know who you're talking to. Until you actually start talking to somebody, and that contact can come in handy further along the road. So go to those conferences. They're not anything to be scared of. I know there's a whole thing where you don't want to talk to people because you're scared to talk to people. I just went to a Women in Science mixer yesterday and I was afraid to talk to people. But once I did start talking to people, you know, just be yourself and just talk about what you're passionate about, and it comes out to be a good thing. And you can learn things, and those things will help you. Go to those conferences. Do what you can. Even if you don't present, that's fine. You can just go and learn something. And the more educated you are, I mean, knowledge is power. That sounds like a cliche, but it's true. The more you know, the better off you're going to be.
As a future professional in the field of fisheries, what are some of the things that draw you to this field?
I love fish. I have always loved fish. Even when I thought they were boring as a kid, I love them regardless. They're just so weird. And I'm weird. And so I was like, I'm like fish. And I think that that's a good thing. I like fish and they fascinate me. And honestly, what I want to do is study their behavior in terms of climate change and see what happens. How can they adapt? And that's something that has just always bothered me. That and invasive species and how they react and predator-prey models. I've always been obsessed with predator-prey reactions and ecology, and it's no different in the aquatic world than it is in the terrestrial world. I mean, I grew up watching David Attenborough VHSs that my mom had, but, you know, muskies go after smaller fish, so do pike, and walleye are predators as well, and there's the whole food chain thing, and I just find that absolutely fascinating, and I want to study that.
And what are some of the issues you see from your viewpoint in the field of fisheries?
I think the only thing that would be a problem is there's not enough, I don't want to sound cliche here, but I don't think there's enough women in the field, and it's like when I was the only female intern, I kind of felt lonely. I mean, I could talk to the guys and everything, that was great, but I wasn't one of the guys. It felt a little awkward. I'd like someone to talk to that I can be friends with. And I think that more women need to be in science because it's something they want to do. It's something that if you're passionate about it, follow your dreams. I've never been feeling like I've been held back because I can't do something. If I had an inkling of what I want to do, I went for it. And I want to see other people like that. In the field of fisheries, that's the only thing that kind of held me back. There weren't too many other girls. And I have a lot of guy friends. I don't have a lot of girlfriends. So I'd like to see some more girls around. Other than that, I think just communication to get new people to come. Because, I mean, we use all these sophisticated words, and sometimes if you don't know what they mean, it kind of pushes you off. And it's just like, oh, maybe we need to talk more in layman's terms. I mean, fish are cool. I didn't even know there was a world of fisheries until I went to Minnesota. And I think we need to get the word out about what fisheries really is. Besides, you know, everyone thinks about fish in marine biology, but that's a whole separate field. When we talk about fisheries, we're talking about something else, and not many people know about that. And I think we need to be more vocal about that and have, it almost feels like a secret society sometimes, but it's not. It's not. And I think we need to get more younger people involved. Fishing is a great way to start people off, and to see the look of how much fun they're having. I mean, I'm jealous of kids sometimes for the amount of fun they're having when they go fishing. When I go fishing, it's actually frustrating because sometimes all I catch are gobies, even though they're my favorite fish. It's like, I want to catch something different. But just little kids, like, they don't care. They don't care what fish they catch as long as they catch a fish. It's amazing. And then that sticks with them, and that's how they get into fisheries. I think that's how I got introduced to fisheries, besides going to the AFS meetings at MSU. I love to fish, and I don't think if my father had never taken me fishing, I don't know if I would be going down the track. So, yeah, those are the only two things I can think of, the gender gap and the fact that we need to talk about fisheries more and get the word out.
Well, I hope you can see past both of those as you begin your career. And you mentioned you were interested in getting your master's degree. Do you have any schools in mind or any projects you want to work on?
Yes, actually, I am really looking at the Ohio State University. There's a professor there named Suzanne Gray, and she works on study modules that one's in Lake Erie and one's in Columbus. And I was looking at her lab, and she studies what's going on in the water changes and how they affect the fish, and I thought that was phenomenal, and I would love to work. So the Ohio State University is number one on my list, and then after that I think is the University of Illinois, and then maybe University of Nebraska Lincoln, because they have an applied ecology master's that specializes in fisheries ecology, which I think is pretty cool.
There are some Nebraska at Lincoln students doing some graduate research right here in Kansas at the moment on the Kansas River.
That's cool.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in that adventure, finishing your undergraduate and then pursuing your master's. But now we'll have a little bit of fun with the final five questions. And you've mentioned a few times, but we always start real simple. What is your favorite fish?
I love the round goby. It is my favorite fish. It really is. They're just so weird. Like, the way they're shaped, and their eyes bulge out, and then they have, like, weirdly shaped mouths, and then they have these, like, round cheeks almost. And I like to call them the Martian fish. That's my nickname for them. But they're just so weird, and I don't want to call them cute, just because then I'll be weird too. I love them. They are my favorite fish. They really are.
And what is your favorite memory from your career thus far, or your schooling thus far?
I remember during my internship, I was on the boat with Tannen, and we were taking sonar surveys. He was driving the boat, and I was at the bow, so we would have equal weight distribution. And I remember we were going around the lake, and I saw my very first bald eagle in the wild. I had never seen that before. I'm from Chicago. We have hawks sometimes, and that's a sight to see. But we normally have pigeons. You don't see, you know, raptors. And I thought, okay, we're taking sonar surveys. We're doing stuff for our internship, and we're doing stuff in the field of fisheries. And here I see this bald eagle, and I'm just like, my life is complete. I love my life. And that was my favorite moment. Other than that, the very first time I held a pike, I'd heard a pike, I'd never seen a pike, and I'd never touched a pike, and a northern pike, I should say. And we pulled a juvenile out of a trap net, and it was life-changing just to see something that I had always wanted to see that I had heard about, but I'd never seen. So, yes, between the bald eagle and the first time I ever saw a northern pike, yeah, those were two of my favorite memories, if not the favorite memories.
And what is your dream job or dream location?
My dream job is to be a fish and wildlife biologist for the Fish and Wildlife Service. Otherwise, I want to work for NOAA. I'm going to have to really work my way up there. I understand that. But if I could start off as a technician, and I'll be happy at that. And as long as I get to work with fish. But yeah, my dream job is to really be a fish biologist with the Fish and Wildlife Service, really. That's always been my dream since I started this field of fisheries.
Are you wanting to work on the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, or anywhere?
I would like to specialize on the Great Lakes and the watershed areas around it. The Great Lakes, because it's the largest amount of freshwater in the world, the fact that we are going through climate change concerns me greatly. And if our shortages of water in the rest of the world get worse, I wonder what's going to happen to the Great Lakes, because I don't know if we're going to be allocating water out or not. And if those waters change, that concerns me greatly. And studying the fish within it, what happens to the fish is my concern. And if I can tell a story, if I could be a fish advocate, that'd be great. Tell the story of the fish, because they need a voice to be heard.
And if money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
It's going to sound really nerdy, but I would love to explore the Great Lakes in a submersible and actually go down to the bottom. I'm a scuba diver, but you can really only go down a certain amount of feet before pressure changes get to you, so you kind of have to be in like a submersible. But I would love to go in a submersible underneath the Great Lakes and actually look for fish and see how big they get, see all the shipwrecks, primarily to see what the Great Lakes look like. Because actually, I was reading an article today. There were some teenagers who were doing a science project with the Adler Planetarium here in Chicago. And they partnered with the field in the Shedd Aquarium, from what I understand. And they threw this drone down into the Lake Michigan. They were looking for meteor fragments. And what they found, they expected to see, meteor fragments, a lot of rocky substrate. They found quagga mussels. Like a whole bunch of quagga mussels. You couldn't even see the ground or the bottom underneath the lake because it was just infested with all these quagga mussels. And so they had called a senior research biologist, which at that time was Phil Willing. And if that's a new discovery, just think of what else we have in the lakes that we don't know about. If money was not an option, I would definitely be exploring them.
Finally, if there is one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Fish are really awesome. No, fish are great. Fish are great. And they're fascinating. And we should really take a look at what their role in life is, because you look at it from a historical and even a mythological sense. Fish have been part of cultures all the way, even in creation myths. And they sustain life, so we need to respect the fish. And in respecting the fish, we can survive another day, because when the fish are all gone, what are we going to do? That's what I think is a good takeaway point. We need to respect fish, because fish are awesome creatures, and they can tell us so much about ourselves.
All right. Well, Andora, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure learning about you and the passions you have for fish, and I wish you all the best in your career path.
Thank you for having me on. It truly is an honor.
If people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, what would be the best way to do that?
The best way to do that is actually, you can email me. So my email is endora.roberts@gmail.com. So it's endora.roberts@gmail.com. And I will answer any questions. And if people just want to talk about dirty fish stuff, go ahead. I love it.
If you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter @FisheriesPod, on Facebook @facebook.com/FisheriesPodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Again, I'm not sure who's going to be on the next episode, so pay attention to Twitter or Facebook. Regardless, download and subscribe on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. If you have any people, projects, or topics you'd like to hear about, reach out and let me know. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 9th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, fish are awesome, and we need to respect them.